You are listening to. First Gen Teachers Lens.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the First Gen Teachers Podcast. In episode 44, I team up with Aaron O'Byrne, and we talk about a universal topic called which is student confidence. And we talk about tips and tricks that you can use student confidence within your classroom. Aaron teaches abroad, more specifically in the UK, and she thought it was a great idea, great topic to talk about because it's so, again, universal in every classroom, everywhere. Don't forget, if you're listening to the podcast and you're a subscriber, to leave a review, especially for my Apple podcast listeners. Leave that, drop that review, like, and subscribe. Tell your friends. Peace.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcasts. Now let's get back to the episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the First Gen Teacher Lens podcast. My name is Mr. C, your host. Today, we have a special episode with another great guest. We're talking about student confidence. Here she is to introduce herself.
Hi, my name is Erin O'Byrne. I'm from the UK, but I live in Ireland. Shall I keep going?
Yeah. What do you do, Erin? Like, what's your passion? What's your career?
I have been teaching EFL, English as a Foreign Language, for over 15 years now, and I've done a bit of academic management. I've run junior programs and summer schools, but my passion is two things really, like building students' confidence, but also teacher training and development. And that's kind of where I'm going in my career at the moment. And as you know, I also have my own podcast, Everything EFL, where I try and give, you know, real practical low to no prep activities and tips to teachers that they can implement immediately.
So, definitely to the listeners, definitely check out Aaron's podcast. There's a breadth of knowledge. I know, being from the States, in terms of seeing how English is taught as a foreign language. I think here it's called ENL, English as a New Language.
ELL, is it?
There's been two variations. There's been ENL, English as a New Language, and then ELL, which was when I was a kid. It was English Language Learners. Right. So it was more so kids that were straight up coming. A lot of, in my community, were kids from coming from Central America or Latin America, and then, you know, adapting to U.S. culture and learning English as a new language.
Right, but, okay.
But I know you mentioned before, talked about student confidence. So that's what I wanted to focus on today. I know you and I spoke about before, different ideas, different kind of questions that we could talk about student confidence. So I do have five questions here in terms of like that. We're going to go through the gamut. Then if it flows into other topics in terms of like student confidence, we'll just go into it. So question one is, what is your definition of student confidence?
Okay. Not an easy question. I just want to say, first of all, that I am coming from an EFL perspective. So my students are generally students who come into paid private language schools. So we focus solely on improving their English. So we don't have a lot of the other sort of stresses and issues that teachers like yourself might have. So I hope that, you know, I know that what I'm going to say might seem a bit simplistic maybe to some of your listeners, because I don't have a lot of the issues that you guys do. But I think that as teachers, we can definitely, you know, build bridges and meet in the middle and identify some real common sort of factors that affect all students. So with that said, yeah, the definition of student confidence, it's a lot. And tell me if I've missed anything out. I think mostly it's self-belief. It's the ability to take on challenges without too much fear. It's not being afraid to make mistakes and then learning from those mistakes and listening to any critiques and feedback. It's to accept that feedback no matter what it is and use it to improve themselves rather than allowing it to turn into this little negative voice. It's not being afraid to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
I've probably missed something out, but these are the things that spring to mind.
Right. Yes. Yeah, so I think for me, I was looking for a chart to break down, I think, multiple choice questions, I think yesterday or last night, in terms of that. And then I went on Pinterest and then I found, you know, classroom decor, you know, because teachers always want to make the classroom nice and creative. So, and then I found one poster that I was like, I don't know if I should put that on next year. There was growth mindset. So on the poster it had the picture of a brain, right? And on one side it was dull and gray and black. The other side was colorful. And then like, this is growth mindset. This is not growth mindset. So I think what you just said in terms of not being afraid to take risks, not being afraid of like feedback, and rather internalizing it and then developing that as your kind of learning point and kind of like using it as a compass or a guide. This is where I need to improve. So I think you're on the money in terms of like, you know, student confidence. Student confidence has to be that, because, you know, failure from my perspective is our biggest teachers. Like, this is where I can grow, right? This is where I need to focus on. This is where I know I'm good at, so I can use these skills to focus on what I need to, I'm deficient in. So I think you're right in the money in terms of like student confidence. And I'm gonna move into our second question, because I oftentimes struggle with this. What are some ways teachers can facilitate activities that build confidence?
Okay. I think firstly, I think you have to realize and explicitly tell your students, everything is a process. This is like my mantra for life. Like, everything, any change, anything you're trying to do, it's a process. It's not going to happen overnight. So as a teacher, you have to bear that in mind. It's going to be a process for you to learn how to instill confidence in your students, and it's going to be a process for the students themselves. Think about, like, you know, we're adults, we've been through it. I mean, I'm sure you have issues sometimes. I have insecurities about, you know, certain things. It's an ongoing battle, and it's no different for our students. I think the only advantage they might have is they're a little bit younger, so we could possibly mold them a little bit, you know. Mm-hmm. They don't have all the adult baggage that we do.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, and also, oh, I also want to say that, like, this isn't like a one size fits all thing as well, you know. Like, mm-hmm. Another mantra of mine is, you know your students best, you know, right, what works for them. But I'll just give you like a few things that teachers really should keep in mind. It starts first of all with trust, establishing trust not only between yourselves and your students, but also establishing trust between the students themselves. So you have to create community. There has to be space where mm-hmm. they can share their experience and their values, find common ground. And even if you have students from a lot of different backgrounds, you can always find common grounds, but you can also celebrate the differences. It gives students a chance to showcase something about their culture or their upbringing or their personality that is different or unique from everybody else. There's so much for them to share, and they have to have that space to share. What else? I've got a big long list here. Collaboration can also help establish trust and community. So I always have three things written on the corner of my lesson plan: collaboration, positivity, and reflection. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they get a chance to work together in any way, that's super important. So even like just checking an exercise together, it gives them a chance to have a chat. Are you finished? Okay, should we check together? What do you think about this one? They're right, communicating right all the time. Oh, we don't have the right answer, or we have a different answer. Let's see what somebody else thinks. Can we come to an agreement? Mm-hmm. Can you help me with this? I'm stuck with this. Mm-hmm. What do you think? And it's kind of on that note, I think another good thing is, because, you know, we always have mixed abilities in classes, I think that it's really important to get the stronger students and turn them into leaders, give them the language of leadership. Right. Teach them how to lead, teach them how to support the weaker students in class so the mm-hmm. weaker students can learn from them. That's really important. And then what else? Positivity, like I said, so important. And you can do this in a number of ways. And again, like I'm coming from an EFL perspective, so I can do this easily in my class. Like if you're teaching maths or something, this might not be as easy, mm-hmm. but things like giving each other compliments, loads and loads of praise. Praise cannot be underestimated. It cannot be underestimated. Getting students to praise each other. Using inspirational quotes, not only putting them in the classroom, but asking students to discuss them. What do they mean? What do they mean to you? How can you apply this to your life? Have a discussion about it. What else? Reflection, super important. How did you do this week? What did you enjoy? What didn't you enjoy? This mm-hmm. shows that you're valuing their opinions. And then if, let's say, you know, they didn't do something that well, this again is an opportunity to learn and grow. Why do you think you didn't do so well? What would you do differently next time? How can we improve on this? Shall we set some goals so that we can work on this? That kind of thing. And again, small steps, telling them, okay, you have to improve this. It's not going to happen in a week, but if we set this goal and see where you are in a few weeks' time, and I'll set you these little tasks to do. Like, I think it's as long as like students can come to the end of the week or the end of the month, look back and say, I tried this, I did this, and I learned this. That's progress. Mm-hmm. And again, like telling them, you've progressed, you've done well, well done, you know, throwing praise at them and making them realize that, you know, success and achieving things, it doesn't happen overnight. It's small steps all the time. And I think it's so important for teachers and students to realize this. In the case of an EFL classroom, furnishing students with the language to communicate with each other. So even things like, what do you think? Can I help you? If they're doing project work, do they have the language to make suggestions, to help each other? You know, do they have the language? Because how else are they going to communicate?
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff you can do, but I think that's probably enough to start with.
No, it's bountiful, because oftentimes, you know, we're so in terms of, like, you know, from a state perspective, like you feel overwhelmed with like meeting these standards that you oftentimes forget, like the small increments of like your lesson, like having good collaboration, like that's key for my classroom, because it gets me to know the students and like who's friendly with who. Not only that, from like first couple of weeks, also who really shines and then can help me out to also facilitate, and then that puts the yeah. onus on them, where exactly. it's that it's not only me just being the facilitator, it's them learning through each other. And that's
autonomy.
The right, that's the best way that that's been some of my best lessons, where I was like, all right, we went over this yesterday, now you guys are going to work in pairs or in groups, right, to hone this skill. And you know, sometimes the kids would even check each other out, like I have a checklist, like let's check the checklist, did we get this? No, see, this is where you're messing up and you need to look back at this is easy. And sometimes they'll like, as we said, they'll clown each other, like, how are you messing this up? Like, this, we got over it just now. And he's like, this is where you're messing up. And it's like kind of them understanding each other's weak points, which is great, because it really gives peer feedback, which is just, yeah. I feel that's more, a bit more positive and face value, because
they're gonna
it's
respond
not
to that.
Right, because it's not just coming from me, and it's there's always that power imbalance where I am the teacher, you are the student, but it's coming from a peer, right? They're more reactionary to it.
Exactly. And I think also, you know, sometimes a lack of confidence and a lack of willingness to speak comes from fear of judgment from their peers. Mm-hmm. So if you can get them communicating well together, you know, that's massive. I did think of one more thing as well, choice.
Sure. Yeah.
Can you give your students choice in any way, shape or form? What do you want to do next week? Who do you want to work with, you know, within reason?
Right.
And in fact, last week we ran out of time to do the weekly test. And I said to the students, OK, give me a score. choose your own score. Think about how hard they're young adults, so they're not going to, you know, mess me around too much. But I said, you know, how hard have you worked this week? How well do you think you've done? And they all gave me their own score. I gave them a choice.
Wow. Yeah. Student choice. What we say, student choice equals student voice, and which is empowering for them, because sometimes I want to say this year, I give them a choice. Like, do you want to do it individually? Do you want to do it in groups? And they'll raise their hands. And I'm like, all right, if it gets too rowdy, I'm like, all right, everybody put their hands in. All right, groups, raise your hand. All right, democracy. All right, groups it is. All right, so do it in groups, and then we'll go over it. And then we'll check each other in terms of like where we're falling apart. It's usually on the writing aspect, and then we'll push forward from there. But a lot of it, the students appreciate when you listen to them and allow their own voice in the classroom, and it just builds rapport with them. That's my main key for this year. This year has been a whirlwind of a year with these kids. But what I've learned is I'm going to have less battles if I build that student rapport, which is also in tune with student confidence. Like that, allowing them to work on stuff together is helped me so much this year.
Yeah. And you have interviewed Anjali Beverly. I've interviewed Anjali Beverly. And she said something to me that I actually took as the title of the episode that I did. And she said, when trust is built, learning can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
But the problem we all face is we've got so many boxes to tick. We've got so much to do in so little time that I think a lot of teachers, you know, feel they don't really have time to build community and all the rest of it. But I think in the long term, it does pay off.
It does. It does. Bountiful. There've been so many. There's been a few kids this year that I've had, I want to say, a tit for tat with. And because I built that rapport or that trust, like that's kind of allowed them to like realize, like, I'm just here to help you. That's what it comes down to. And then that breaks the barrier of like, you know, this teacher student authority figure versus like, you know, student figure. Like, you have to obey me because I am the facilitator, which is not the case for some of these kids. So, and that inherently for me ties up into student confidence, because the more confident a student is with you, the more confident and focused they'll do the work, and they'll grow from your feedback, pure feedback. Which, in speaking about growth, I'm going to go into that next question. How does one measure student confidence?
This is a tough one because, like I said, it happens over time. Mm-hmm. Everybody's different. And you often get those students who seem outwardly very confident, but I think they're probably the ones with the biggest insecurities.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking for changes rather than someone who is confident immediately and go, oh, they don't need my help. They probably need the most help. You're looking at the shy ones who don't speak as much, you know, those more withdrawn students maybe. And it's just, like I said, you know your students best. You will see it in their body language.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see it in their sort of their response level. They'll be more likely to speak up. But there is stuff, some stuff you can do. I would call it like a self scale, reflection. Again, reflection's really good for this. How can you make students aware of their own growth in confidence? You can do surveys. You can just ask them, how do you feel compared to last week? I did a little exercise a couple of weeks ago. I'd had some students and they're Japanese who are culturally very reserved, shy, terrified of making mistakes. You cannot have an open question in a class of Japanese students. No one will answer.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave everyone a mini whiteboard and a pen. And I said, okay, I want you to write down out of 10 your confidence level when you first arrived. And I want you to write down your confidence level now. How do you feel? This was about 2 weeks into their arrival. And pretty much without exception, every student had a 2-point rise in their confidence level. So if one was like 3, it changed to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them commented, oh, but it's only a small number. I said, yeah, but you've been here 2 weeks. Think about 2 weeks' time. And then think about 2 weeks after that and 2 weeks after that. You know, the only way is up. everything is a process. I always say it. In fact, I say everything is a, and they go process because they know.
Right.
You know.
It's true. It's
yeah.
It might seem like a cliche, but like for me, even as we're students, we're in terms of like me, we're trying to build literacy skills, and then you know that's like the foundation of a lot of things. Because often the pushback I get is like, why are we learning this? Why are we doing this?
Yeah,
and that is like intertwines with student confidence, because they're like, ah, this is boring or this is dreadful. But at the same time, right, I put it the onus on them, right? I was like, you're building so you can have like a robust vocabulary, right, later on as you go into like your high school career and then beyond, right? That's the name of the game. And then you know, they're like really pondering. And then now I have kids asking me like what high schools they want to go to, because there's a process over here in this in the city where they apply to different high schools. And you can see some of the more timid kids that they've come up to me and like asked for you know, ins and outs of rigorous high schools in New York City, which showed me at the beginning of the year, this kid was like, I didn't hear a peep from this kid. Now they're coming up to me and then, you know, asking about, oh, how do I apply to this school? Does this school focus on the medical field, et cetera, et cetera. So it's over time. And you know, over time, like you'll grow in these skills, your writing will grow, you know, your vocabulary will grow. So you're right. It's over time that carries into our daily lives.
It does. And you know, the fact that they're asking you means the seed is planted in their mind. Oh, maybe I would like to apply here.
Right.
And that's where it starts. And then again, small steps. How can we foster that and facilitate that so they do apply and they do believe that they can get in? I'd like to go back to a point that you said about the kids say, why are we doing this? It's another thing that really engages, as you probably know, is, you know, making the tasks meaningful. How can I make this grammar task meaningful? How can they use it in their everyday lives or their experiences? How can they connect this information to something personal and emotional? Because when you make those emotional connections in your brain with stuff, again, learning happens.
Right, exactly. And then that's another point in terms of, you know, we talked about peer feedback and collaborative or collaboration, right? But making things instantaneously tangible for the students there's something about it that it gets the kids excited. Engagement is through the roof. Where I did one lesson where we were online, and I was struggling the entire year because I've never taught online before, but due to the pandemic. And like student confidence just dwindled. Like kids were not engaged. But I remember this, my best lesson. I did an article. It was called Save the Turtles. And it was about this trend. It was called the VSCO girl trend, where girls had like their hair bands and then metal straws. I was like, what is this trend? And we were reading the article, and I didn't know that it was a trend to save turtles, like use metal straws instead of plastic straws to save turtles. And then all I see is in the, you know, we're kind of like in a Zoom meet, like just where we are now. But, you know, all I see is these girls turn on the camera, running. I'm like, where are they running to in their house? And then out comes metal straws, and they're all screaming, save the turtles, save the turtles. My best lesson was that. And then it was really, really nice to see students not only having the confidence to show that to me, because this is the first time I'm with this group. And not only that, but we read the article swimmingly that period. I've had so much engagement, and I was like, wow, like I should find trendy more things. And then it was for a span of about 2 or 3 weeks, just having engaging content allowed the students to open up that camera, which is another self kind of, you know, reflective thing. Like, oh, I don't want people to see my house. But I was like, you can put the background on. And then after that, it was swimming engagement until it died, like getting close to summer, but but it was so much fun. It just shows me, like, you know, exactly what you said, having tangible reasoning makes it almost
meaningful
for them, and also, like, it just makes it easier for them to, like, engage with the task. Yeah. I can, this applies to my life. I can really see how this is applicable to my life and talk about it outside of school.
Yeah.
So my next question is, I guess we kind of touched upon it. What outcomes have you seen after student confidence is built? In terms of, and we just talked about it, you know,
students. We do, but I do have a couple of nice examples that actually happened to me this week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had a lovely week. So like I said, I have these Japanese students, and we started a video project a couple of weeks ago, and they chose the groups that they were going to be working in. And then they chose a project manager, because I had tasks for the project manager. And usually, you know, you would assume that the stronger students would be nominated, or they would nominate themselves. Now, in one group, the weakest, shyest, quietest student was nominated project manager. And I thought, oh God, this is going to be a bit tough, you know, and she did struggle. I saw her struggling, you know, and I had to also have a word with one of the students in her group just to say, give her time, because she was being asked questions and you could see the cogs turning. Mm-hmm. But she was given no time to really think about it and answer. And the other girl kept jumping in and asking her and rephrasing the question. And I said, just give her some time. Like, she just needs some time, you know. Anyway, back to this week. So we did reflection at the end of the week about the project. How did you like the project? What didn't you enjoy? What did you learn? What would you do differently next time? If you were a project manager, what did you learn from it? Was it a useful experience? And she said, you know, at first I didn't like it. It was difficult. But then she kept pushing herself, which, you know, I'm going to take a bit of credit for that, you know. And she said, like, but, you know, eventually it was good. Like, I learned, you know, like, she really was happy with herself that she managed to achieve the task of being the project leader. And the other group member said, I said, you know, I can see the change in you this week. You know, you're smiling more, you're relaxed, you're answering questions more easily. And then one of the girls in her group said, I can see it too. And I just said, I'm so proud of you. It's fantastic. Absolutely amazing. And then another guy who was one of the quietest in the class at the beginning, like I said, I got everyone to give me their own test scores. And he came up to me. And I said, what's your score? And he said, I'm going to give myself 90 out of 100. And I said, good. I said, because you've done really well this week. Now, if I had done that in the first week, he probably would have given me a 40 or a 50,
mm-hmm.
you know, but we've talked a lot about, you know, those small steps, achieving those small goals. And every week what we do is we brainstormed a list of how they can improve their English. What little things can they do every week? So every week we reflect, what did you do last week? Did you achieve it? Should you do more or less next week according to, you know, your timetable and your willingness and all that? He's joined a club. He's had conversations with native speakers. And you can do his confidence is just rising and rising and rising because he's pushing himself. And again, during that first week, I don't think he would have joined a club. I don't think he would have walked into that room with loads of native speakers and started a conversation with someone. Mm-hmm. But gradually, these small steps, these little small victories, I call them, they really do make a difference. I really do believe they make a difference. And I suppose other ways you can see it in my field is their language skills go up, their fluency goes up.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. No, I completely agree. You definitely see and pinpoint students who were timid, and you see them blossom into, I want to say, social butterflies. Like, so many kids this year, like, I have one kid who is super quiet, sits at the back corner. He's of Nigerian descent, mm-hmm. and but super, super respectful. And I've had I want to say at this school, loads of proofs of kids from parents who were from Nigeria or descendants. And there, I've noticed, like, there's like a level of timidness when it comes to teacher student relationship, but he, so far he's been coming up to me, talking to me more. And not only that, like talking to students, like when you give them the opportunity to self-reflect and collaborate, it's just like there's been I want to say a level of understanding from him. Like he knows what to do on a short response, and he guides some of the other students. So that I took that, what you were saying earlier, that kind of collaboration piece, and that's where it really boosted his confidence. And now he's social, more social than I would have ever expected him to be. Yeah. This year,
well, you've earned his trust, and also just a little point on different cultures. It's good to know, if you're teaching a lot of cultures, it's good to know a little bit about them. And I would say, from my experience with pretty much all African students, I've had them from Congo, from Somalia, from Eritrea, from Ethiopia, from Sudan, all over the place. And they see teachers, there's a boundary there. There's mm-hmm. a boundary of respect. Mm-hmm. And they will act in a certain way, and they will call you teacher. You know, so it's just about, you know, that little cultural difference where you've basically taught him over time, you know, this is how we do it here. It's okay. You know, you can talk, you know, that you've kind of knocked that wall down a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Cause he was so scared of me at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I was like, it definitely has to be an African thing, because like I had students, I remember I had a group of siblings, two brothers and a sister, same pattern, same thing. And then I remember talking to the mom, and then she told me in Africa, like everybody's like they're like, you know, an uncle. And so she has to respect you, because, you know, where it's like an extended family at school. And I think that's where I was like, I put two and two. I was like, is that where the line is drawn across? Then once we did these little things where confidence was instilled with him and rapport was built, that's where, like you were saying, the barrier, the culture barrier was broken. And then it allowed him to flourish within, you know, my own teaching style. And also, like, you know, when he's doing these collaborative activities. My last question, I guess, goes into, you know, sentiments of students' confidence. So how can sentiment of testing, because it's always a big issue for me, affect students' confidence? Because I feel all the time with standards and meeting these, you know, explicit benchmarks really hinders a lot of kids, especially those kids that are really, like you mentioned earlier about Japanese students, there can be no marginal for error, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I'm looking at, where students who have that mindset, how does that deeply affect their confidence?
Again, another tough question.
I'm so sorry.
I like a challenge. I can only speak from my experience, because we don't have kind of yearly exams. We have kind of weekly progress tests, and we do a lot of exam prep classes. So there are certain English exams that students take. Again, I just think constant work on that mindset, constant work on building their confidence. That's important. You have to just keep working at it and keep working at it. And, you know, letting them know that it's these box ticking exercises and these exams, they're not the be all and end all and everything. And again, that's a process. Then you can't just say it once. It has to be instilled in them. If their confidence has been built to a particular level, they will do as well as, you know, they'll push themselves to do as well as they can. And I think as long as they've done that, what word am I looking for? That's all they can do. That's all they can do. And I think also having a contingency plan. So, okay, you didn't do as well as you wanted to here. Again, reflection. Let's examine why. Which part was difficult for you? What do we need to work on? Okay, let's set some goals. Again, I'm repeating myself, but let's set some goals. Let's right. take some small steps to change it. It kind of just comes down to these fundamental concepts. But I also think that mindfulness is extremely important. And again, it's all of this is connected with positivity, with growth mindset, But I think, you know, you cannot underestimate the power of breathing. So in one of my exam preparation classes, for example, they were always extremely nervous before the listening exam, the practice exams that we did in class, because they're very difficult. And also the speaking exams, obviously, that's the most, you know, the most nerve-wracking one. So we breathe, we did breathing. We did two things. The first thing we do is we go to our happy place. We close our eyes and we go to our happy place, just like, you know, Phoebe from Friends, the babbling brook. But I tell them, okay, this is, I'm going to describe my happy place. My happy place is I'm on a beach. I can see the beautiful clear water, a few clouds, blue sky. I can feel the warmth of the sun on my skin. Sand is white. I can just see my legs stretched out, you know, and there's palm trees either side of me. And I can just hear that gentle lapping of the waves and I can feel that warm breeze. And that's my happy place. What's your happy place? So we talk about that. And then if they want to, they need a moment, if they're like a little bit uptight, close your eyes, take a nice deep breath, go to your happy place. And then the other thing you can do is just some simple breathing techniques with them, you know, like rolling your shoulders and your neck and then doing nice deep breaths. And one really simple exercise to do, and I've done this before when my anxiety has been through the roof, is you do a square. So hopefully I can make this clear because you're watching me. So basically you trace out a square with your fingers. Okay. One, two, three, four, each side. And you say, okay, we go. The first line is you breathe in two, three, four. Okay. And then when you draw the next line of the square, you hold your breath, two, three, four, and then you go down and draw the next line. You breathe out, two, three, four, all the while watching my finger. And then you finish the square and you hold your breath, two, three, four. So it's a really simple breathing exercise and you go through it a few times with them, tracing the square. They're looking at your finger, tracing the square, in, hold, out, hold for four. And it really does calm you and center you. Now, if you can incorporate that into your lessons, by the time they come around to doing the test, they can do it themselves. And I think you cannot underestimate the power of breath and breathing. And I think the sooner you instill that kind of thing into your students, that's a lifelong habit that they can take with them, you know?
Right, right. No, I agree. Wow, I didn't. I'm going to try that next time when we have a test. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, it is the same mantra that we've been talking about the entire episode. It is a process, right? Everything is a process.
Everything.
And children, it's so I don't want to say it's for them in the moment, it's not as instantaneous, whereas they're like, I don't see like the end goal. But once you break it down for them, it becomes this reachable goal, right?
Exactly.
I think students oftentimes have this idea, right, of pushback where it's like they're lacking this confidence because there's lack of personal reason for it. So you mentioned, you hit it on the nail on the head where you're just like saying, right, it's a process. It's not going to happen over time, right? It's going to happen marginally, right? You may not be where you want to be today or tomorrow, but eventually, right, you'll reach where you want to be, you know, in terms of your academics or in terms of how well versed you are in English, right? So you may have struggled on this passage. Doesn't mean you're going to struggle on the third passage. It's just practice.
Exactly.
Practice makes perfect.
And I think more so for this younger generation, they live in this social media culture of instant gratification. Everything happens now. They're seeing these people on Instagram with these amazing lives. Blah, blah, blah. But do you know what? I often, like I said, I use inspirational quotes, and it's good to find ones. You can always find quotes from people they know. Like, I don't know how big Dwayne Johnson is now with the kids. I'm not down with the kids at all. But
he's huge.
You go, oh, brilliant. Look online. There are so many quotes from Dwayne Johnson you can use. And he says all the same thing, consistency, you know, all of the rest of it. And it, when they see people, again, that connection, making that thing tangible and relatable to them and meaningful to them, using those people who've actually said those words can really make a, you know, have a positive, powerful effect on them as well.
Yeah, you know, I absolutely agree. Well, it is the end of our episode. I want to thank you, Erin, for being a great guest. To any listeners out there, definitely check out her podcast, Breath of Knowledge. Definitely, I've I'm going to take her breathing exercise for my students, but check her out. And grab a listen, man. There's always stuff that I feel like when I'm listening to her podcast, I can gravitate towards and apply into my own classroom, whether it's like, you know, an exercise or a lesson that she's had in within her own lessons. So definitely check her out and stay tuned for the next First Gen Teacher Lens episode.
Thank you for having listened to the First Gen Teacher's Lens. We'll see you here next time.